PFT Media.
Disclaimer. All episodes of The Experience with Chris Fio were recorded prior to the COVID-19 pandemic.
This is The Experience with Chris Fio. In each episode, Fio brings his unique and unashamed interview style to Central Florida. He conducts honest and open interviews with people that have the vocabulary and expertise that he lacks.
In this episode, I talk with my friend, the photographer Jason Fronsek. Jason has had a difficult journey, but at no point did he lose his love for life, nor his desire to make art. Jason is also an advocate for the restoration of voting rights for returning citizens who have completed their time in incarceration.
That vision is slipping like a worn transmission. The days of transporting and not transmitting, cause the transcontinental flow got me transient. I'm transcribed the transcript.
Hello everyone, welcome back to another episode of The Experience with Chris Fio. Today my guest is the wonderful photographer that helped build The Experience with Chris Fio, Mr. Jason Fronsek. And I want to start out by saying it's an honor to actually be able to interview a friend. So Jason, tell me, how did you first get started in your field?
Keeping my eyes open, I don't know. Grabbed a camera. I guess it would help to turn the mic the right way. how did I get started in my field? I got started kind of early on. My uncle used to come and visit when I was a kid from San Francisco, and he'd always bring his camera and show me tips and tricks on how to click the button, I guess, and that got an early interest. My dad had a camera rig. I was not really allowed to play with it much, so later in life when I finally got my first camera, I just went everywhere with it and had a blast. Years later when I joined the service, I decided that I wanted to go in for photojournalism, so I signed up for that, went through the school, and got the formal training, and been shooting ever since.
Oh,
almost 20 years now.
Really? Wow. And you mentioned the service. This is my first understanding of you were actually, which branch of Army military were you in?
Definitely not the Army. I was in the Navy.
Okay.
Not that I disgruntle anybody in the Army. Everybody who's in the service rocks. So.
Yes, they do. Support our troops.
Most certainly. No, but I ended up being a deckhand, a boatswain's mate. But when I got to my ship, my captain saw that I had training in photojournalism and said, hey, we don't have a staff position for a photographer, so you want to fill that gap? And I said, absolutely.
Wow, what type of things would they have you capturing on film?
Flight operations, underway replenishments, special operations at sea.
Like classified things too?
No, definitely no. Okay. I mean, even though I had the clearance at the time, that didn't quite happen. There were certain things you just couldn't. I mean, that was part of the reason he asked me, because I had the training in what I could and could not shoot and what had to be edited for anything that got published. So,
okay. Well, how long did they have you doing that?
I was on the boat for 2 years. So.
Wow. A long time. Did you see any like active battle in your time?
No battle. We were overseas in North Korea area in 2003 when North Korea was testing their missile strike capabilities, and they shot one over us, and we had to go to battle stations. That was the closest we got.
Wow, how did you feel at that moment?
I mean, we were prepped and we knew what we were getting into, so it's just like surreal, but I don't know.
It's really happening. You're like, oh man, this is really happening.
No, not no. No, because like 10 seconds later, we North Korea just called, they apologized, they didn't know we were here.
Had we known you weren't.
Yeah, so. you know, it's politics.
Yeah.
But after the service, I just kept shooting. I did have a hiccup, and...
What were you shooting mainly? How were you working while you were filming? Were you filming while working?
Filming, no. Photographing, yes.
Okay, photographing. I'm so sorry. I'm not a photography expert, and to be honest, I barely know anything about photography. But, you know, but I do know a good photographer's work when I see it.
I can honestly say it's only been within the past 6 years that my craft has actually developed. Yeah. Before that, it was just kind of hit or miss. I mean, I had the training. I didn't have the gear, so I just played around with what I had and kept shooting. And formal training or no formal training, if you don't keep shooting, you don't get better.
Wow.
That's the reality of it. I was talking with my mom earlier today about that. She met a photographer out in Colorado, and he's got no formal education in it. And I said, the formal education for photography is continually shooting and understand what you're seeing. So
the you know, the pudding's in the practice, basically.
Right. So while I'm going for my MFA, fine art specializing in photography, that doesn't change the fact that I have to continually shoot to get better.
Right. Does the equipment make it different when you're shooting, or does it not make a difference? Well, it does make a difference, but how does it affect your overall activity on the field?
Well, as in any other field, there's specializations. The equipment allows you to specialize in a specific field. For me, my favorite is candid event photography, specifically art openings. I don't like it when people stop and grin at the camera much. It's kind of awkward for me.
Yeah.
I like to catch the raw emotion of people interacting with each other and how they experience the art, not how they're looking at me. I kind of like to blend into the background, even though my flash is going off left and right sometimes.
But, so you say your proclivity is more to the natural rather than a staged photo.
Right, absolutely. Today I just finished up a shoot where it was absolutely all staged. Amanda Wagner with General Assembly, she reached out and asked if anybody was available today, and I jumped to it, and they did a nice service with their clients and offered professional headshots at the wall crawl space downtown on Church Street.
Oh, wow.
And that was really beautiful space. They bill it themselves as an Instagram-worthy wall space. And there's like 15 or 20 different individual booths, if you will, that were just designed for headshots. It was pretty amazing. So I got to play around with some studio lighting today. That was exciting.
Oh, wow. Nice. Is this your first time with that type of equipment?
With my own personal gear, yes. First time shooting headshot booth, no. I've done some freelance work with other photographers in the past.
Have you traveled with the work?
No. If by travel you mean international drive to the convention center, yes. But outside of Orlando, no, not really.
Would you look to travel with your work? How far, or if you're willing to travel?
My dream job was National Geographic when I first started. Right now, probably not. I mean, yeah, I would love to travel, though.
Yeah. And would you do another magazine? Because you do have previous experience with... Artborn, one of the big art magazines here in local Florida. And would you do something else like that if you had that chance?
Absolutely. I would love to resurge Artborn. It was something Orlando needed, something Orlando still needs now. We did 12 issues over the course of 1 year, 2016-17, and gave Orlando's art scene a much-needed voice. We helped bring together the art community instead of all these segments everywhere. See, I would like to see that come back.
How did it come together the first time?
Some guy, Jonathan Ubi, he had a vision that Orlando needed this, and he put the word out, and everybody bit. And he brought together a really awesome team.
He was a part of that team. You were the creative director for our program,
That would have been Mac Duke.
Oh, Mac Duke.
Mac Duke was creative director. I was the lead designer, senior photographer.
Oh, wow.
So.
Yeah, you were basically the backbone for this magazine. You had to actually come up with meat. of
right.
the
he gave me, Jonathan gave me a dummy mock-up of what he thought the magazine should look like. He had it laid out in this smartphone application called Canva. And I kind of just threw that in the trash, and a week later gave him something and that we ran with.
Yeah, you know. So it's safe to say if Artborn hadn't had you, it would have been...
It could have been better.
Yeah, it could have been, you think?
I don't know. No.
I don't think so. You definitely had a very big influence on that, and you know, from what I see on my show, too. So I think it wouldn't have done any better without your help. You know, and... You have any future plans such as that?
Well, part of I would like I said, I would like to get that back on the road, but that's going to take a lot of planning. I'm going to have to bring in the business manager that's pretty savvy with finances. Try and convince Matt Duke to come back on board, maybe. Some of our writers, I think near the end, we all got kind of burnt out because. The money issue, but you know.
Why? So that was the reason why Artborn stopped, or what was the overall reasons?
Primarily financing. We couldn't get anybody on board to help us with sales. So, I mean, if you're going with the print media, it costs money to print, you know?
Yeah.
And if you're not printing, there's no magazine.
Wow, yeah. And is the cost, you would say, very high for printing?
Yeah. Well, the quality that we were going for, yeah, we could have probably dumbed it down, but it wouldn't have been the same. Orlando Arts Magazine's got a beautiful publication, but their focus is on a different slant of what the Orlando arts community is. Ours was spotlighting individual artists. Theirs is about more the entire community, the venues, the artists, the people behind the scenes. Ours was geared solely towards the artists.
Right, so you gave a highlight piece per page or per two pages for somebody. Well, that's really cool, and you don't really see anything like that nowadays. From what I try to look, maybe there's a couple publications, but they're like really tiny local, like not something like what I've seen here. And it just brings a different aspect to your character that you actually have done something like this, because normally when I hear photographers, they don't really have that much of a hand in something like that. They're just, I did the photography like freelance, and then I got the money and I go. So you're more of like the hands-on type photographer than...
Kinda, yeah. If only I had that much diligent with my own practice. Yeah, that would be nice.
Yeah.
I like a manager sitting over my shoulder.
Oh, yeah. Nobody does. It's not a comfortable feeling.
Oh, I need that. I need the direction.
Yeah.
Institutionalized to the bone. Wow. So.
Well, that brings us to our next question, the institutionalization. It's not a secret, and I think I've asked you for permission to ask you this. You were imprisoned at one point of your life.
Right.
And are you comfortable going over
Absolutely.
The reasons of your imprisonment?
Mostly, yeah.
Yeah? Whatever detail you would like to tell, please tell us.
So, I was accused of burglary. Doesn't take much in Florida. Currently, I'm involved in a prison education project, the Florida Prison Education Project with UCF. I'm teaching art out at the Central Florida Reception Center in one of the prisons locally. And we've got 16 students currently. And I think the most impactful lesson I can teach them is through virtue that I myself was once where they were. A matter of how I had gotten there, or it's more the fact that I was able to get through it, I was able to get out, I was able to change my mindset about a lot of different things and not become a victim, but instead take charge of the situation and move forward, find people who would allow me that opportunity and just grab it and take it. You know, I almost immediately enrolled in Valencia after getting out. They had the Direct Connect program with UCF, which was amazing. And I finished up my bachelor's there in 2016. I did Artborne from 2016 to 17. I applied for the MFA program a second time in 17, got accepted, and now I've got two semesters left.
Wow.
This past semester is when I got invited to teach with the Florida Prison Education Project. And my first day in the class, when we finally got around to introductions to myself, I introduced myself as a former felon. Well, not a former, I am always, but
would you say that actually helps influence your class to listen to you more, just coming from an I was there standpoint?
Absolutely. Even though the majority of the class had taken another class with the lead instructor, the program director, Dr. Kerry Watson, I feel that my presence and sharing my story briefly with them opened them up mentally to, hey, this isn't just burning time. There's something possibly out there after for us. There are people and organizations who are willing to extend a hand and help me to do something better and help me change my...
That's good. I mean, because a lot of people who go to prison and are who stay in there a long times, like 5 plus 10 years
right.
plus, are institutionalized, and that's all they know.
Right,
so
right.
So what I'm getting from you is you're trying to help rehabilitate them from that mindset.
A lot of art is about changing how you see. Part of the... don't know if rehabilitation is the correct term here, but part of the program is helping this person, our students, change how they see. When you change how you see, you change how you react. If you can change how you react, you can change the way you approach things, you know. And for the majority of people who are in prison, it's usually because of the way they react. And I think it's fair to say, from all the researches that are out there and from my time in, that the majority are also because of drugs and alcohol use. And if you can change how you see and react, you're going to change how you go back to those things, which are going to draw you back into that environment. So art isn't necessarily about learning how to draw a perfect figure. Everybody that's in my class, a majority of them, their first words were, I can't even draw a stick figure. I say, that's good, because I'm not teaching you how to draw a stick figure. I'm teaching you how to see this over here as something completely different, something that's not an object. You're not going to be drawing the shape of a body. You're going to be putting points of interest on a piece of paper that reflect, okay, this is the inner part of the eye, this is the outer part of the eye, this is the upper portion of the head, the chin. So you're just going to keep making squiggles until you see something emerge in an image on a page.
Right. That's interesting. That's a very interesting curriculum. How did you set that curriculum up for this class?
I'm just emulating something that I went through when I started with my program at UCF. Intensive drawing. And it was a summer intensive course.
So for the people who are going to listen into this, what is intensive drawing?
I believe it's a six-week expedited course UCF offers over the summer, that at the beginning they have you draw what you think is how you should draw. And yeah, I couldn't draw that first day. And they just gradually introduce concepts to you, and as you're being gradually introduced, you're in class like 5 hours a day, so it's intensive. That's the intensive part.
Oh wow.
So as you're gradually being introduced to all these new things, he's subtly asking you to stack these lessons on top of each other. So it's a proven method. And to look at my first drawings and my last drawings, like, wait, you mean I can draw? No,
wow.
I can see better. I still need my glasses, but yeah.
Yes. Well, you don't need them much to see.
So I even at one point tried arguing my way out of having a drawing class, being a photo major, and the director of the program brought somebody in from Disney who had worked with, what was his name, from Dances with Wolves. He did the movie. And
I wish I was like Joe Rogan. I could just say, Jamie, pull that up.
All right, no. But he said, this guy who the movie is based on tried arguing the same thing, and his instructors directed him to take a drawing class, and he begrudgingly did this, apparently.
What was your argument?
That as a photographer, I don't need to draw. More eloquently stated, of course. I think I wrote a three-page paper on it, and
three-page.
Yeah,
that's quite an eloquent excuse.
But they brought me in and said, "Listen, our whole program is based on the fact that you're going to be a well-rounded student. So yeah, we need you to do this." So I'm like, "All right,
okay, I have to do this. Whatever it takes." Was it like an elective or was it absolute?
Oh, no. This was to get into the program.
Really?
Period.
Oh, wow. Okay.
If I wanted to get into the BFA program, I had to pass this class. Otherwise, I would have just gone for a BA.
Oh, okay.
So
it was required then.
And if I wanted to go for my MFA, I had to go for the BFA.
Oh.
So, yeah, it was the long game I was going for, not just the quick certification, because I wanted to teach.
Seems like you're actually getting that done so far really well.
Yeah, now all I got to do is finish this semester. Midterms are this week.
Yeah, well, good luck on them.
Oh, yeah, I went in this morning. My project had fallen off the wall, so.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Really? And what was the project?
It's still in development.
Oh, okay. So
It's concerning some struggles juxtaposed to my son. He's everything to me. He's why I'm doing everything. So it's a lot.
Yeah, you're a father, and you're a good father from what I see. You know, I've known you for quite a little bit now, and you've had your struggles, you know, but you maintain the best you can, as well as giving some fairly wisdomly advice to me sometimes. You know, it really shows to your character and, you know, how you redeemed yourself nowadays. And you actually had a lot of success lately. Some of your pieces were up in Snap.
Yes.
Yes, they were.
One piece got admitted, and I called them up and I said, listen, this is, I'd really like to see if I can get these together, because it's part of a series that's showing two parts of an image. It's showing the original, which is unedited, which is who we are and who people see, and the second is the edited image, which represents who I think people see or who I think I want people to see. They're kind of inseparable, and he agreed, so I got two pieces.
Oh, wow.
Which was awesome.
Awesome.
They were very subtle differences, but sometimes
subtlety makes the difference, right?
Absolutely.
You must have felt like $1 million when you heard that, right?
Yeah.
Wow. So. You are a man of many virtues. Man of many virtues lately.
Well,
you're teaching classes for prisoners, which I want to go back to that. How did you create that program? How did that?
I didn't create it.
No.
Was no, it already not at all.
So you volunteered for this.
There's a national organization Higher Education in Prison that has been around for I don't know how long, but Florida's or UCF's prison education project I think started in 2016 or 17, and they've recently started teaching in the prisons in 2017. So when I heard about it, I reached out a couple times. And that was when I first started my master's program. And it took a couple months to get back and forth to actually get into the office and say, yes, I want to do this. There was an orientation, and there was a meet and greet, and things just kept crawling slowly forward. Finally, we did the prison orientation so we could be a volunteer. Then we had to develop the class plan, and we had to submit a list of materials that we were going to bring in. In order to do that, we had to get material donations. So it's been a long process.
A lot of red tape to cross.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
No staples on anything. Yeah.
None.
No. Nothing.
Clean as a whistle.
Yep.
All right, we're reaching the top of the episode now at 25 minutes, and I have one last question for you, the Fio question I asked every guest I have on here. Now, you are a man who's who seems like he's more than just his photography. You do many things to make Jason Fronczak a better person. So why, as Jason Fronczak the man, should we take you more seriously in your endeavors?
Wow. Seriously is not really the right word. I like to think that I'm adventurous and impulsive. I enjoy my craft. Why you should pay attention, maybe not, if you're interested in local arts community and like to see the real look at how it is and not just your normal, hey, I'm here. If you want to get a sense to what the community is about, for my actual artwork, I look at myself and what I've missed. My newest concept, it's not new, but if life isn't still and we're always in motion, then why is photography so still? So I've been exploring a lot with moving landscapes, with the camera moving as it's taking the shot, with double exposures and light leaks, because life isn't pretty. But it can sometimes be serene, calm, chaotic, all at the same time. So that's what I'm exploring with my work.
And that's beautiful. Sounds like you're writing an orchestra with your work without having any music behind it. And with that said, this has been another episode of The Experience of Chris Fio. I hope to talk to you all again soon. But right now I know there's no place in the world that I'd rather be than right here, just you and me. There's no place that I'd rather be than right here, just you and me. Just you and me. There's no place that I'd rather be than right here, just you and me. Just you and me. There's no place in the world that I'd rather be than right here, just you and me. There's no place in the world that I'd rather be than right here, just you and me. The Experience with Chris Fio is produced by Boris Douglas Garbe and Kai Legal. It is a joint production of Borma, Vonti, and PFT Media. The theme song is You and Me by NWAR Superstar. There's no place in the world that I'd rather be than right here, just you and me. A PFT Media production.